You're listening to The Central Cast, recorded each week in front of a live audience in Glendale, California.
I think I know most of you, but in case anybody is here who doesn't know me, my name's Steve. I've been coming to Central for, 8 years. Maybe 9 years, somewhere in there. Sometimes when Aaron is out, I will be invited and am able to come up and share some words that are on my mind. So today is one of those mornings. If you've been around for the last few weeks, then you know that Aaron's been in a series of talks around leading up to Easter through this Lent season, around the crucifixion and sort of the suffering of Christ, the suffering of God. We're going to take a little break from that this morning and talk about some of the other events that happen around the Easter season. When I sit down to write a talk, or when I tend to think about what's going on in my life, and maybe I've often said to somebody that I feel like sometimes I am writing a talk to myself, and then I just kind of hope that it resonates with somebody else. I think tonight is this morning is definitely one of those times. Can I turn this down a little bit, Bob? Okay, cool. So one of the things that I find that people often really stress about, especially around when they become a parent, is missing the first things that happen. You missing out on maybe the first steps or the first word, the first tooth that comes through for a little one. Missing these kind of milestones as they happen seems to be a big source of anxiety for a lot of new parents. I have a few different friends recently that have become new parents, and this is something that I kind of consistently talk about with friends as they have kids. I've heard of people who have experienced a first and then pretended that they didn't see it just so that their spouse, when they come home, can maybe see it for the first time and have that experience. I have a friend back in Detroit who has a one-year-old, and he's been talking about leaving his job and being a stay-at-home dad, and for a lot of reasons, but one of the big ones he keeps talking about is he doesn't want those firsts to happen at daycare. He wants to be around for them. So this seems to be something that permeates a lot of people for anxiety. I mean, don't get me wrong, most of you know Gene, and I have really loved being there for a lot of his firsts. I have I was there for his first word, which was bubbles, and I have that on video, and I'm really happy about that. But I've never really had anxiety about missing out on the first things. I have anxiety about a lot of different things. That's for some reason never been one of them. Instead, I feel like I'm the opposite side of the spectrum. I have a lot of fear and anxiety around the last time things happen. I hate the lasts. I hate the ending of things. I kind of want to hold on and experience things as long as I can, for every last drop, and not let go. I really dread the idea of seasons ending in life, when I see that some season is coming to a close. And I know that someday will be the last time that Gene has a nightmare and then comes and crawls in bed, because after that, he'll just be too old and he won't need it. I know that someday we'll be going to cross the street and he'll hold my hand across the street, and it'll be the last time that that happens. Just inevitably, as he grows up, those things won't happen anymore. And I think what tends to be my source of anxiety is that I'm not going to recognize those things as they're ending. And one day I'll look back and I'll go, oh, he's just so old that he doesn't need to do that anymore. I don't need to cut up his food anymore. I don't need to, that we've just sort of moved past this phase of life, and I never really even noticed because I was so busy being in life and wrapped up in everything that's going on. Somehow things just sort of slipped past and changed, and I wasn't there to be present, to be mindful of it. And it's not just about anxiety, or it's not just a fear, and it's not just about parenting. I think, I tend to try to hold on to those last things all over the place. When I go see a good movie, a really good movie, as I did just a week ago or 2 weeks ago with Dune, like when everybody else is getting up to leave the theater, I tend to just like sit through the credits and try to just like experience the last few moments of the score before I leave and everything goes back to the normal life. I go to a lot of concerts, and after a concert, I'll kind of just like hang out and stay in my seat for a while as people are starting to clean up, or I'll hang out outside in my car and I don't necessarily want to get back to the normalcy of just the everyday speed that everything's in, and I want to just kind of live in the moment of when things are different before they end. These moments, though, I think they're seemingly insignificant when they're occurring, and in the grand scheme of things, they can often hold a really profound meaning in the kind of the tapestry of our lives as we move forward. The lasts can signify the end of cherished chapters in our life, or they can remind us of often, I think, the relentless march of time when things are just moving forward so fast. But they also can mark the start of new chapters, of new beginnings, of hope for the future, renewed energy as we move into a different place. And I think for a lot of us who have gone through kind of a religious deconstruction, as we often talk about here at Central, these moments of endings and change and things slipping past can, I think, be a constant source for us as we sometimes maybe look back at who we were or what we thought 5 years ago. Well, I don't necessarily know where I am now, but wow, have I changed from who I was a few years ago. And sometimes that's deliberate, right? Sometimes there's a moment and we go, well, I need to reevaluate things. And sometimes it's just our perspectives have shifted. And it's only sort of in the looking back that we say, yeah, wow, I did used to read that book, or I did used to think that way, or whatever those things are. Particularly in the way that I view that deconstruction process, it seems to be an ongoing process of sort of constantly evaluating and pursuing and changing and moving forward and not really getting stuck in any one place. You know, it's perhaps the great philosopher of the 90s, Semisonic, who said it best when they said, every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. So here we are in the end of Lent. Next, as Bob said, next week is going to start what we call Holy Week in the church, which is starting with Palm Sunday and then ending with Easter Sunday. And this week, right, it's the most important week in the history of the church. But it typically, I think, because we come to church on Sunday, it kind of gets bookended into these two conversations, which is on Palm Sunday, a lot of churches tend to talk about the crucifixion. And then on Easter Sunday, we tend to talk about the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, spoiler alert. Or sometimes we talk about Palm Sunday as what Palm Sunday was originally, which was Jesus arriving in Jerusalem for the last time in his life for that last week. So kind of we talk about that, and then we jump ahead to Easter, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in between in those last weeks of those last days of Jesus's life that I mean, we all kind of know the stories, but we don't tend to talk about them as often. So today I just want to take a quick look at two of those stories that happen on Thursday, what we call Maundy Thursday in the Holy Week calendar. But two of the events that happen in the last few days of Jesus's life, and particularly not looking necessarily at what Jesus is doing, but looking at what the disciples are doing and those that are around Jesus and how they're sort of reacting to this last week. So the first is the Last Supper. We all know the story of the Last Supper. We've read it 1,000 times. You know, we practice it every week in communion, as we will later this morning. It's this moment of fellowship and community in the community that Jesus has built. This moment of fellowship for the disciples and Jesus. And I've always thought of it as from this perspective, Jesus probably shared many similar meals with the disciples. This is probably, I mean, they traveled together, they went to all the different places. This is probably something that they did all the time of just sitting and eating. This is also Passover, so it's the most important meal in the history of, you know, in the Jewish calendar. So this is a special meal for them in particular, but it's also probably something that they did constantly. Sitting and listening to Jesus talk for a little bit and then eating food together was part of their everyday regular community. But Jesus does single this moment out as something special. He takes the bread, he takes the wine, and he breaks it open. And he really says, you know, do this in memory of me. You know, he really tries to impart this message of like, things are not always going to be this way. Just do like, remember this moment and do this in memory of me. he tries to underscore this and imbue it with a deeper meaning. But if you look at what happened, the disciples in none of the gospel stories, they don't really react to him. They don't really have a response to him. But there is a response that they give immediately after, which is after sharing the bread and the wine, Jesus then moves on to say, hey, in some of the gospels, it's one of you is going to betray me. And also in Mark, it's talking about Peter, you're going to deny me three times. And everybody freaks out then. Everybody spends all of their time getting wrapped up in this fear and anxiety and what's going to happen. No, I'm not. And who's it going to be? But they didn't react to the first thing, but they've reacted to sort of the anxious moments of what's going to happen. They're sort of fixated on this prospect of like betrayal and the community, you know, and the friendship that they have between the two of them. And then after the Last Supper, three of the disciples go with Jesus and they go to the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus asks the disciples to just sit and hang out while he goes and prays. And I think we often talk about what Jesus prays because that's a moment that's very important where he asks God to take this cup from me and that kind of stuff. But if you look at what the disciples do, it's kind of interesting because when they first get there, he says, hey, can you sit here for a while I go and pray? And the disciples that are with him, Peter, James, and John, they, quote, begin to be distressed and agitated. So they're very like, I mean, you can imagine sort of, I don't want to. Like, why do we have to sit here and wait while you pray? Well, go for it. Thank you. So while we're figuring out what's going on over there, so then Jesus goes and prays and he comes back and we all have heard that he finds the disciples asleep and he sort of chastises them for falling asleep. And then he goes back and prays. Then he comes back and they're asleep a second time. And then he goes back and prays and then they're asleep a third time. And then all of a sudden, all the events of the betrayal and the arrest and everything kick off. And then we move into the rest of Easter. I find that the disciples are often this way, acting like this in the Gospels. They're kind of an interesting group of people that very commonly, when you see them talked about, you know, Jesus is telling a story and they're going, what are you talking about? Right? Or Jesus tells a story and then they follow up by saying, yeah, but which one of us is your favorite? Or Jesus, you know, he'll talk about his death. And then I think it's Peter that comes up to him and starts like chastising him, like, no, stop talking about that. Like, we're going to defend you. They like don't get it. They're so wrapped up in this, like, I'm sure, you know, the chaos of traveling and figuring things out and big groups of people and whatever, that they never, it doesn't really seem that they ever stop to just like sit and be present and be mindful of like the reality of the situation that we're in, of we're still going to be talking about this stuff 2,000 years later. This is changing the history of the world in the moments that we're in. And I want to, if we take a step back and then look at a couple of stories very briefly of things that happened in the Old Testament and how people reacted to events that happened back then that were important. So there's this story from the book of Joshua, where Joshua and the Israelites, after Moses has died, they're taking the Ark of the Covenant and they're traveling through the desert and they come to the Jordan River. And they're not really sure what they're going to do at this point. And God commands Joshua to have the people who are carrying the ark just like walk into the water with it. And so they trust that and they get up and they walk. And as soon as their feet touch the water, like 12 miles upstream, the water stops and all the Israelites can cross the river. And then the second they get to the other side of the river, the water starts flowing again. So this wild, miraculous experience happens. And Joshua has the leaders take stones from the base of the Jordan and bring them to the shore and pile them up. And he does this because at some point in the future, the next generation is going to ask, what does this big pile of rocks mean? And then their descendants could tell them, or their ancestors, you know, their grandparents or whoever could tell them, well, this is where the Lord brought us across the Jordan and onto dry ground. This was a place, a sign of marking that this was something really important and sacred that happened here. This happens a lot in the Old Testament. There's a point where God delivers Israel from a battle, and Samuel, the prophet, stands up this huge stone and names it Ebenezer, which means stone of help, as a way of remembering that this event happens. Jacob has a vision in his sleep, and he wakes up and he takes a stone that he was using as a pillow, which doesn't sound comfortable at all. And then he grabs a bunch of other stones and he sets up a pillar of stones as a reminder to himself and to future generations of this great vision that he has. And there's other ways that people mark time as well. One of the ways I think of is Moses comes across the burning bush and he realizes in that moment that he's actually on sacred ground, and he takes a moment to take off his sandals so that he can be present and grounded in the time that he's in. There are many stories of people reacting this way to the events of God that seem to all or mostly happen in the Old Testament and don't seem to happen quite as much in the New Testament. I think there are times certainly where this, where people do mark that time, but it seems to be more common when I'm reading these stories of the Old Testament. Times where people mark moments in their lives by slowing down and becoming what I would call like hyper-present, hyper-mindful and aware that what they're experiencing right now, this is important. This is something that we want to just remember and mark. Sometimes a huge thing like the winning of a battle, sometimes it's because of a dream someone had, and just mind marking that that might be an important moment as well. So in my life, it was actually 11 years ago today that my wife and I, who had just gotten married, packed up a tiny little two-door car and we drove from Detroit out here to Los Angeles. And we didn't have any job prospects. We didn't have a place to live. We had an Airbnb for like 5 days and we were gonna figure it out when we got here, which in hindsight was a really, really stupid idea. But it worked out. We found a place, like everything obviously worked out, and we've been here for 11 years. But before we left, I met with one of the pastors of the church that I went to, and I sat down with him. I was moving out here to go to seminary, and I sat down and asked his advice. And he told me this story of Joshua and crossing the Jordan and the piling of the stones, and that as this important, kind of talked to me about how that was this important moment in the history of Israel and this thing that tended to happen. And it's a story that really has stuck with me. Whenever I am mindful and present in these moments where I'm like, oh, this is something important happening, this is something really sort of sacred. Even a great film where I'm like, wow, I just saw something special. This was more than just the Fast and the Furious. This was something that really is gonna be impactful. I often will think about this story and think about this idea of sort of mentally stacking stones here to try to remember and be present and be mindful of this special moment that I'm in. Now, some of you know, I don't know that everybody knows, but this summer we're going to be embarking on it. We're moving again. This time we're going to pack up a four-door small little car, but we're driving back to Detroit. We're going to be moving back to be living near family to help, you know, help out with some family things and moving our family back to Detroit. And so I'm going through another one of those processes where I'm thinking about things ending and I'm thinking about a new chapter in my life. And I'm finding all of a sudden that I'm driving through LA and I'm getting this sense of, I don't know if it's anxiety or dread or whatever, as I just see these little things like, oh, I'm never going to get a breakfast burrito from that place, or I'm never going to get coffee at this coffee shop I like again. That's a skyline that, I mean, not never, we're going to come back and visit, I'm sure, you know, but like things are going to be different. And it's not the huge things. It's not the enormous things that I'm thinking about. It's these really mundane things of going through walks through this neighborhood and that's going to change. Or yesterday I went and sat at one of my favorite coffee shops and just sort of sat there for a while and drank a cup of coffee and just tried to be present and mindful in the moment as like, this is a thing that has been important that I want to remember. And I want to sort of be hyper aware of and hyper mindful of as a chapter is closing. I think often we don't see chapters closing as they're coming forward, right? They move past and then we look back and we go, oh yeah, that restaurant I loved closed, and I guess I'm never going to eat there again, or I'm never going to have the experiences of life that change. Life continues to constantly move forward. New moments and events come and go, and I think it's just a reminder that Can we have the presence of mind to sort of be aware in the moments that we are? You know, we often will talk about being mindful of our lives, but it's the mundane, it's the small things, it's those times where the ordinary and the sacred can often overlap, where the divine comes into interaction with the specialness of our life in just even a small way, as a meal that we're eating, or a concert we're at, or a movie we're watching, to maybe a huge thing as moving across the entire country, and finding those times to sort of take a moment, appreciate where we are, recognize that we're on holy ground, and that these are moments to sort of stack those stones and mark the time in our minds as things to look back on. The other great philosopher of my life, Ferris Bueller, says it best. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. So as we close out the Lent season, a time of reflection in general on the fleetingness of life. You know, we started Lent with Ash Wednesday, where we talk about memento mori, remember your own death, remembering that life is fragile, ashes to ashes, dust to stuff, dust to dust. That's sort of heavy and that kind of stuff. But let's also partake, you know, today we're going to be partaking in the Last Supper in our own way, our own communion. And as we move out of that, thinking about the finality of life, but maybe just into thinking about the finality of the moments of life, or just thinking about the specialness of the moments of life. So as we partake in communion this morning together, I'd encourage you just to maybe, as you're listening to the music, take some time and reflect back on your recent life. What are those moments maybe of change that have happened to you? Was there maybe a chapter that has ended? Maybe just thinking back in the last few years and thinking about how things have shifted, and is there a place, a delineation point of maybe marking a point in time and saying, oh, wow, yeah, that was something special that I went through. Or maybe you have that coming up. Or maybe just in this moment, it's thinking about the ordinary, the small things, the holding hands with your child as you cross the street, or the conversation on the phone with your parent last night that wasn't an argument or something like that, and trying to be grounded and mindful and cherish those small moments as we move forward. So here at Central, you know, as you know, if you've been around, we do communion differently. We take the cracker and we dip it in the juice, and then we serve each other as a reminder that it's not just in that do this in remembrance of me with Jesus as just that idea of remembering him, but it's in those shared moments of when we serve each other, when we build community and communion with each other, that we find that overlapping place of the sacred and the ordinary. And of course, you know, the elements are gluten-free, alcohol-free, and free for anybody who would like to partake in them.
Each episode of the Central Cast is followed by an interactive discussion. If you'd like to participate in recordings, or if you're interested in exploring progressive faith and theology for a postmodern context, check out centralavenuechurch.org. Here's this week's unedited discussion.
So as we do every week at Central, we have a time after the talk where we can do reflection, or any thoughts that you have, questions, comments, ideas, or maybe just what was the time in your life recently or time coming up where maybe that stacking of stones is a delineation point of a chapter in your life that maybe is going on or has happened in the past.
It sort of made me think of like before, when I was in the sort of conservative, you know, growing up, I remember thinking that the moments that I remembered the most were the ones that were wrong, right? Like it would hit me like, oh, this is something I need to pay attention to because it feels wrong. It doesn't feel like it's truth. It doesn't feel, you know what I mean? And I feel like now in the second half of my faith journey or whatever, I feel like now there's more pinging, like, oh, that feels good. Like that's now what was wrong now makes sense because I now have what feels right. So I feel like I sort of just flipped and have like a different moment of like, oh, I need to take this in, you know? I just wish now I haven't read the Bible since I started coming here. And I'm now very interested to like read the Bible with new eyes. Mm-hmm. Because I do feel like I will see different things because when all you have is one perspective, right? You see it from that standpoint. And now I feel like this church is so open to like different perspectives. I can sort of feel it for myself. And I now have my gut feeling back and I now have my intuition and I trust it. And I go, oh, you know, this is not what this meant. Or maybe I don't have the historical context or something like that. Before it used to make me feel bad about myself because I was, you know, bisexual and I was attracted to women and that's a complete and utter no-no. So it was like, oh, all of these verses scare me. They make me feel like I'm damned to hell for the, you know, eternity burning in hellfire. And it's like, now I'm like, okay. I mean, it was tradition. It was how things were, it was how things needed to be at that time or just were at that time. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like I focused on the bad before. Those were the moments I did. And now I can focus on the moments that feel right and good.
Yeah. That makes a ton of sense. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like growing up for, I think one of those things for me is growing up, I was so obsessed with everything has to be part of like, oh, I have to constantly be looking for God and everything mm-hmm. that like, nowadays it's in the special moments that like, oh, it's like, oh, that actually does feel like a God moment. Or that actually does feel like we went out to Death Valley last spring. And I was walking out on a dune and I was like, whoa, this feels different. Like I'm all alone in the, like on this dune. And like, something is like, this was one of those times where like, oh, I have to really pay attention here. Where I think as a growing up in the church, it was like, yeah, everything. And I agree. It was often around, some of those God moments were often around, you're doing this, you need to stop doing this. Or you need to, I think that's a very good point.
And I think it's wrong to say that they can't happen in those moments and that
yeah,
it can only happen at church with mm-hmm. when you're speaking in tongues or slain in the spirit or whatever. It's like, that's not, I don't need to be out of body to experience God because he is within me and I should experience him mm-hmm. all the time on many different levels. You know, sometimes it's overwhelming and sometimes it's just a feeling, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Thank you. Any other thoughts this morning? It's okay if not. Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoy your St. Patrick's Day. I hope the rest of your day on the last couple of days have been just beautiful spring Los Angeles days. And, you know, I hope that you take a moment today in the craziness of whatever you're going through in life and just take a deep breath and notice the changing of the seasons and the moment of life that you're in today. Yeah. Let's, as we're leaving today, let's all read our benediction that we read each week. As we go from this place, we commit ourselves to the path of love, honesty, and humility. We dedicate ourselves as Christ did to the just cause of justice and the courageous embrace of this life, this world, and each other. Amen. Go in peace. Thank you.